again for the networking and for the learning. Like I just go to soak it all up and just hear what the challenges are, and to also meet people that are doing work on the front lines to see how I can be of help. Removing barriers to employment by looking at everything from the application process through hire. So, you know, again, with this, you have to be willing to do like, you know, a scan, a high-level scan of all of those things to see like where do things start to drop off or become crazy for someone, you know, who is maybe neurodiverse or disabled or whatever the case is. Like you have to be willing to look at it from a lot of different perspectives and just see like how things may not actually be easy for them, right? Something as simple as putting a text enlarger on your career website, it's a plugin. It's not anything that costs you a ton of money, but like for somebody who has visual impairments, that's everything. You know, something like having conspicuously your ADA statement, you know, from your company about how you're treating disabilities and saying that you have, you know, you realize you have an obligation to the ADA rulings, and here are the things that you're willing to do, and here's the number you can call if you need a reasonable accommodation. Again, those things put people back in a power position because you have to understand that it's either the person themselves that's trying to make strides for themselves in employment, or there's a vocational person that's with them that has to sift through your site and figure these things out. And so what I've learned over the years is we always want to put them in a place of power. We don't ever want, you know, any person, neurodiverse or otherwise, to feel like they always need assistance. It's not a charity thing. You want to empower them to be able to do for themselves. So as I mentioned before, you know, there are some organizations that I feel, you know, are great resources for outreach and also just for further education. I'm big, big fan of the Viscardi Center. They're here in New York. I've been working with them, you know, pretty regularly for the last 17 years. They were my first foray into this work. They're actually a school, so they literally educate young children that have a myriad of disabilities up through high school and up through like they have an adult day program. The work they do is just insane. Like if you're ever in New York and you can set up a tour with them to see like what they do and how they get people to work and train them, I would highly suggest it. Family Residences and Essential Enterprises, they're another great organization that I've worked with over the years. If you're looking for more resources on neurodiversity, neurodiversitynetwork.net is phenomenal. They not only have advocates on their website, but also a ton of information. There's a website for the National Disability Employment Awareness Month, which is really in tandem with Department of Labor. And Department of Labor has great information as well, believe it or not. They've actually built out some great things and resources for employers. So that's something else to check out. And then as far as CUNY, so the CUNY Neurodiversity conference that I was speaking of, they have programs called Project Reach and ASD. And those are the two groups that actually put on that conference. Wonderful resources. Like literally when you go on their page, there's a pretty lengthy booklet, PDF of reasonable accommodations. Now, granted, a lot of it is education focused, but I'm a big fan of stepping outside the box to get good ideas for things that we need to be doing in the workforce. And I would argue that even though a lot of it is education focused, it's really, really pertinent and helpful in terms of how you think about how you want to serve this community from a strategic standpoint. So I will end with, you know, the goal of diversity should not be charity, but rather parity. And if you do it well enough, parity should eventually become equity. It's my own quote. It's something I believe in. I don't believe that the job of us as a society is to treat every marginalized group as charity that we constantly have to help and feel pity for and make them feel like they're downtrodden. I think that our job is to level the playing ground, to support and to empower people so that there is true equity for them in society and at work. And with that, we will go into our Q&A. I thank you so much for being with me. And I think Rayvon will take back over so we can answer some questions.
Yes, that was such a fantastic, fantastic presentation. Thank you so much, Janine. I especially love that portion where you talked about being person first. Beautiful, beautiful job there. All right. So before we dive into questions, like Janine said, now is the time to get straight from the source, insight from her. So great questions contribute to a great webinar. So don't forget to submit your questions. Additionally, don't forget to register for the next episode in our Level Up Your Recruitment Strategy series, The Top Trends and Talent. You can't miss the top trends and talent you can't miss, excuse me, presented by Teresa Smith, Senior Managing Partner at HCM Strategic Advisory Group. We are sending the link to the chat box right now. Lastly, we understand if you need to run, just know that today's session is being recorded and will be emailed to you in the next 48 hours. Alrighty, so let's go ahead and jump into audience questions here. For our first question, and it's coming in from Emily. She says, what has been the most rewarding part for you for doing this work?
Wow, yeah. I think so much. I mean, just learning how people see the world and how, differently than you. I remember like really early on when I would do like mock interviews for, people at the Viscardi Center. And one person that I was interviewing, they had, somebody that was signing for them. So a speech person. And so your natural inclination without knowing, what the best practices are to look at the person that's signing, and kind of speaking to them because you're figuring like, well, if I speak directly to them, then they'll see exactly what I'm saying and then they'll be able to sign it all the quicker for the person that's watching. Well, anyway, I learned then that like, that's not the proper way to go about it. And that in fact, you should be looking directly at the person, that you're interviewing and, the speech person, that's their job. Their job is to figure out what you're saying and get to signing it so you don't do those sort of things. So it's like, little things like that, just learning that has been extremely rewarding for me. And also, I don't think I've ever come across a person that just wasn't incredibly gracious for my time and for my interests, understanding that like any little thing that I could do for them was going to be a huge thing for them in terms of getting employed or learning a new skill or something like that. So I've made friends for a lifetime, and honestly, it's just been an honor for me to serve, in that community as long as I have.
Such a great answer there, and that sounds so, so rewarding. Thank you, Emily, for asking that question. So moving on to our next question here, because we'll have about a few more minutes before we close out. It's coming in from Trisha. She says, can you talk to her a little more about heart-centered behaviors and what that means to you? And just as a side note, I really love that term. I don't hear a lot of people saying that enough. So I want to know your answer to this as well.
Yeah. So, I think that most of what we get offered or most of what all of us were taught, when we entered the workforce was to be ultra cerebral, right? Everything was about our intelligence and how well we can maneuver in the workplace, from that standpoint. I think when we start talking about heart-centered behaviors, it's really quite like what it sounds like. We're getting out of our heads and into our hearts, right? So that means that like what may be logical may not actually be the best approach in that situation. So for instance, like if somebody is neurodiverse and they're working for you and they are, maybe a little bit cut and dry, not the most pleasant to be around, it's not going to jumping to logic and thinking, well, that person's a nasty person or they have a nasty attitude and I just don't enjoy working with them. And instead, maybe you take that person aside and just say, hey, I'm picking up some things from you, but I don't want to judge. Would you be open to just educating me a little bit more about how to best work with you? Right. And like, supposing that comes from a genuine place, because I think that's another prong to it. I think people can feel that. I don't care what walk of life you come from. I think everyone wants to be understood, especially someone who has something that's glaring that maybe, makes people a little bit off put to be around them. So I think, that's like just an example of how you can kind of employ a heart-centered behavior is by reaching beyond what is comfortable for you and trying to give grace to another person, but also understand them where they are at. I hope that makes sense.
An amazing, amazing answer there. Thank you so much, Janine. I really love that answer of, you can pull someone aside and be like, hey, I'm having a hard time working with you, but what kind of tips do you have for me to work better with you? Like that really just opens it up and shows them that like you really are trying. Amazing answer. Thank you for that. So with this last 4 minutes, I have a great question coming in from Christian. He says, are there certain aspects you should be considering when creating onboarding or creating a workforce that is overall inclusive? I know you gave amazing, amazing tips already about little things we can do, but what kind of aspects should they be considering?
So I always like to say like doing a culture checkup is important. I'm big on culture. I understand the importance of it, but I also know that, from where culture stands, there are also like these offshoots of subcultures that end up sprouting out organically in an organization. And I want to say that I don't think that employers like generally set out to marginalize people or to not have people feel like they belong. But I think sometimes when you don't have the right checks and balances in place, and you're not checking your people, especially your leadership, or anybody that's in a position to hire, fire, et cetera, that's where you get into problems. So I think making sure that your leadership, that you do that culture checkup to be sure that you're not perpetuating barriers, that you're not perpetuating things that, seem like you're not inclusive or equitable. And really just taking step by step, like as an organization, how do we fix it? Like start breaking that down and fixing the things. And also communicating to leadership and making sure that leadership is empowered to communicate that to their teams about what the expectations are. There can't be gaps in your culture and how you're operating ultimately, because that's where most organizations, get into trouble. So I know that that's like really high level, but arguably that's where you need to start because I think most organizations have some place where they can either improve or they're just great problems and it needs to be looked at before you start really going out there and making grand proclamations about like, come work with us, we're safe, because people really are going to expect to be psychologically, emotionally, and physically safe in your workplace once you start saying those sorts of things.
Another fantastic answer there. And also just to reiterate, that resource page that you had posted up just, a few slides ago is an excellent source too. So while you're going through and looking at your processes and seeing those gaps, look at those resources too and see what kind of information they can give you to help you along in creating a better and more inclusive culture for everybody.
I want to add really quickly that absolutely to that, but also you can take it one step further and you can absolutely reach out to places like the Viscardi Center, Project Reach. They are extremely happy to speak with you and even look at, the ways you're looking to go about things, whether that's onboarding and things like that, just to give you like honest feedback, because ultimately it ends up helping their community, the community they're most concerned with. So don't just think of it as a physical resource, but also think about it in terms of outreach. Like they're really very willing to help.
That is amazing. Thank you so much for that resource there. And with that fantastic answer, that is all the time that we have for today. I hope everyone learned as much as I did. Thanks to our sponsor, Lover, for putting together this fantastic webinar. And a big special thank you to you, Janine, for taking the time to give us such insightful information.
Thank you.
Absolutely. And a huge, huge thank you to everyone in the audience. Thank you for your attendance. I hope everyone has a great Thursday and enjoy the rest of your week.